KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
Song, Greg.
Sounds like he's got a long song.
Yeah,
coming.
Now it's 9:45. Perfect. Okay. So we're joined. Let's see. Good. Look at that. Dr. Berry and Willie Bentz, right on cue. Welcome to KPTZ. Welcome, Dr. Berry. Welcome, Willie. I want to announce that we have next Monday off, the fifth Monday of the month. We do not meet on Mondays, so this broadcast will not be happening on KPTZ. Just want to make sure everybody knows that. Greg?
And the following week is Labor Day, so it will be on Tuesday.
Thank you very much. Yes. So we will not be in this format on Labor Day, first Monday in September. It will actually be Tuesday. So confirm that that works for KPTZ. Dr. Berry and Willie, do you think you'll be available Tuesday morning?
I'll be instead? There.
Perfect. Okay, great. Thank you. I'll hand it off to Dr. Berry to be the bearer of more bad news.
Yes, unfortunately. So case numbers continue to rise nationally, statewide, and in Jefferson County. I did have a request from a KPTZ listener to talk about a couple different ways to look at the data, see if I can make it more explainable. So I'll see if I can try that out a little bit today. So nationally, cases are up 39%. Hospitalizations are up 43%. So for perspective, that means 88,000 people are in the hospital on any given day for COVID-19 in the United States. Deaths are unfortunately up 99% in the country as a whole, which means 1,000 people are dying every day of COVID. We are back to that level of severity. In Washington state, cases are up 40%. That means 3,000 people in Washington state are diagnosed with COVID every day right now. And hospitalizations are up 54%. So on any given day in Washington state, over 1,000 people or 1,300 are hospitalized at this point. This is the highest amount of hospitalizations we've actually ever had in the pandemic. And we have ICUs in multiple parts of the state that are full. Especially on the east side of the mountains, we're seeing cases where people who are having strokes, people who are having heart attacks are actually being turned away because there is no ICU bed space for them. We don't have that situation here. We do have strain on our hospital system, but we are still able to deliver proper care. In Jefferson County, our current case rate is 263 per 100,000. That continues to be the highest we've ever had. Our total number of cases is 640. That's 84 actually just in the last 2 weeks. So that kind of gives you an idea of what we're looking at. The numbers in Jefferson are always a little tricky to break down because we have a small population and blessedly a small number of COVID cases because we are so well vaccinated and Jefferson County residents have been doing a really good job by and large with following pandemic protocols. So often we can get a lot clearer data when we look at actually Clallam, unfortunately, because we have more people and unfortunately more cases and at the state as a whole, so we can get to statistical significance. In Clallam County, we have very high rates. It's 497 per 100,000. The way I would think about those numbers, so there are some particular questions about that rate. What that is it's a way for us to compare across regions. So that's why we break it down to 100,000 populations so that King County is always going to have more cases than everybody else just because they have a whole lot of people. But this makes the counties comparable. For comparison, what's considered a high rate is 75 cases per 100,000 and Clallam's up to nearly 500, Jefferson's at 263. Most of the response, Jefferson County has been at less than 25. So that kind of gives you a little perspective on what you're facing there. In Kitsap County, numbers are also very bad. We are up to 402 cases per 100,000 in the last 2 weeks for Kitsap County. There was also a little bit of question about data generally from KPTZ. I just want to highlight, we also have data on the Jefferson County Public Health website, and the Washington State Department of Health has a really good data dashboard. So if you are graphically inclined and you want to see things graphed out, I enjoy seeing things graphed out. They have a lot of good data that you can tab through. So key takeaways at this point, certainly we're seeing the highest rates of viral transmission in our community that we ever have. We are seeing exclusively Delta variant in our sequencing at this point. Now is a really risky time to spend prolonged time in indoor spaces, especially if you are unvaccinated. If you are vaccinated, one thing that I think is important to know is we have never seen transmission between vaccinated people in an indoor space with masks on. So it's still very reasonable to put on a mask, go to the grocery store, do those kind of things. But if you are unvaccinated, I would highly encourage you to get vaccinated right away. Some good news on that front, the Pfizer vaccine was fully approved. So it's fully FDA approved as of today. We're very excited about that. So now is a great time to go out and get that vaccine. But mainly, the biggest thing that we all can do besides getting vaccinated if you aren't is wearing a mask. That both parties wearing a mask really does make an incredible difference in reducing transmission of COVID-19. We don't see breakthrough infections in that kind of context, and we don't often actually see any infections in that kind of context. We're still not seeing cases where two masked people are spreading COVID-19 between each other. It really makes a huge difference in reducing transmission. I did have a question among the listeners on indoor versus outdoor transmission. So I think it is a good time to review that. There have certainly been kind of some reports in the news that might be a bit confusing. So we are still not seeing transmission under normal circumstances in outdoor spaces. I've even had friends and family messaging me and saying, is it okay to have a barbecue? I thought it wasn't. I'm not sure. It is. It's very safe to be outside. The only times that we've seen outdoor transmission is these really packed close spaces, so mosh pits, some large festivals where people were really, really close together outside. Otherwise, we really don't see outdoor transmission. So your standard outdoor gatherings are very safe. But whenever that comes indoors, it can get really risky. And so that's the biggest thing to think about if you're planning an outdoor gathering, is making sure there is no point in the day where it becomes an indoor gathering. We can't have a whole birthday party outside and then come in for cake. Because as soon as you come in for cake, you know, have an indoor gathering. So just thinking about those kind of things as the weather changes, making sure you have a plan for if it rains so you don't end up having COVID transmission there. So with that, be happy to take questions from the commissioners to start out.
It's, I'll jump in with one just since you started with data. I've gotten so used to the per 100,000 over a 14-day period. And I find it a little frustrating that the same metric isn't used consistently nationwide and sometimes even statewide. You look at CDC or New York Times or DOH, and sometimes it's over a 7-day period. And, for example, with my son leaving for college, I'm trying to understand, what's the risk in DC currently. And it's reported in a totally different way.
Yes.
Is there a standardized reporting system that could help alleviate that confusion?
Totally fair question. It would be fantastic if that were standardized. It used to be standardized at the 14-day rate. And then somewhere in there, the CDC switched to 7. And so that's a lot of us have been looking at whether or not we want to switch over just so we can be comparable. Mostly the state, Washington State, has stayed at 14 throughout the state just because it is a number we are used to tracking. It's, we've set all our metrics up based on 14 days. And it's also particularly useful for small rural counties because we have such a small population that 1 week over another, our data, if you look at it, if you like looking at the graphs, is already really noisy. And so if we switch to 7 days, it becomes less useful. So particularly for Jefferson County, I think 14 is a better metric. But if you want to compare, actually, if you go to the state DOH dashboard, there is a little toggle where you can switch it to 7-day. So you can compare to the CDC.
Interesting. Okay, great. That's very helpful. Thank you. Hi to you, Greg.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Barry. Good news about Pfizer. You know, good to have some good news on a Monday morning. I'm curious if we have more data as we're, you know, still fully in this on some of the other mitigations that we've used, like, you know, plexiglass screens and more modeling on ventilation and how, you know, getting a cross breeze. Can we take screens off our window and put a fan in there? Are there other things that we can do to increase the safety of the indoor spaces that we often occupy? And I just see, you know, it seems like most of the spread is happening often in informal inside gatherings. And if we can give more tools to those gatherings where maybe people just aren't going to wear masks and there's no mandate that can make you, is there other mitigations that we can provide that might help?
There are definitely things that can help. So, you know, the plexiglass shields, they likely provide some additional protection, but, you know, especially against, you know, coughs and sneezes, things like that. But they aren't enough to replace masks, you know, especially with, so one of the things with Delta variant is it's not just droplets anymore. There's a much greater percentage of it that is truly kind of aerosolized spread. And so that's what's allowing it to kind of filter over some of those things that used to work better. The biggest thing, you know, of course, biggest bang for your buck is put on a mask, and also control how many people are in that indoor space. So if you're going to have an indoor gathering, think about how big it is. One of the things that worries me is if I see, you know, parties of, you know, 50 or more in an indoor space, that can be problematic, but that also depends on the size of it. So spacing still matters. Looking at kind of how well you can space within that area, you know, we have certainly some churches that are quite large and have been able to space. They still have, you know, meetings of 200 people, but they have a big space. And so they can space their people out and then they wear masks as well. Ventilation certainly helps. So opening windows and doors, having a good HVAC system. So looking at your indoor air circulation. And there's a lot of good info on ventilation. You can kind of dig into the details on the State Department of Health website, but there really are filters that can help. Having one of those HEPA filters available actually does help as well with both that and smoke. So bonuses all around. But I do think it's important to acknowledge there's not really anything you can do that can make it reasonable to pack hundreds of people indoors without a mask on. Even if you put all the filters there, that's not enough to overcome that. But it is one other thing you could do that would help. But mostly it's thinking about how big it is. Certainly one of the biggest things you could do is make sure everybody's vaccinated. We have not had transmission in, you know, fully vaccinated indoor spaces. So requiring vaccine, requiring masking, looking at how many people, adding the ventilation, all those things together, and you can have a really safe get together.
Can I just follow up one thing? You had said in your presentation that we didn't have any indoor transmission from mask vaccinated to mask vaccinated person. Mm-hmm. Are you now saying that we also haven't had any vaccinated to vaccinated indoor transmission? Has there been any breakthroughs in that context?
So I would need to look. I need to look for that specific detail. I'd say when we get breakthrough, the vast majority of the time it is unvaccinated to vaccinated. So it's most commonly household contacts. So unvaccinated family member to vaccinated family member. We have had some workplace breakthroughs to vaccinated folks. And every time we look at it, there's a mask breakdown. So it's that, you know, this unvaccinated person was sitting right next to this vaccinated person. And they weren't wearing masks and they were sharing lunch and then they had a breakthrough. We aren't seeing breakthroughs when people are following all the protocols. So we aren't seeing breakthroughs in workplaces when people are wearing masks, when the vast majority of folks are vaccinated, those kind of things. Really, every time we see a breakthrough, there's either a breakdown if it's work, or it's just that you live with this person. And so you're getting exposed in a lot of ways. We do think it is possible for a vaccinated person to transmit the virus to another person. I don't think we've actually ever documented that here, but it can't, we do think it is possible. And we certainly have seen cases that look like that is possible on the national scale, but they're very, very rare. So your risk of getting COVID is much lower if you do get COVID. COVID, the chance of you transmitting it is much lower. You tend to, if you're going to be infectious for a much shorter period of time. So that's most of it. But if you are a vaccinated person and you're trying to think of how to keep yourself safe, I think that's the most common question I get is, you know, folks who are elderly and high risk and they come to me saying like, hey, I thought I was doing what I was supposed to do. How can I be safe? And the way you can be safe is you wear a mask when you're in a public space. If you're vaccinated and you wear a mask in a public space, you're really going to do just fine. And, you know, think about avoiding those really crowded indoor spaces. You know, if your church is one of those ones that really packs people in there, I would consider doing that from home if you're in a high risk group. But it's okay to go to the grocery store with a mask on, all those kind of things.
Final question. Can we stop? It doesn't seem like phimetic transfer is very common. Can we stop wiping down with alcohol the credit card machine every time?
Yes, actually. I mean, at least for COVID, there's other things that are probably helpful that we helped with the fomite transmission. But yes, fomite transmission is really not the primary way this virus spreads, including the Delta variant. It's still really aerosolized particles is really what you're worried about. Certainly keep washing your hands. That's always been good public health practice. But I wouldn't worry as much about surfaces and think a lot more on how you manage the air.
Thank you.
I have a few things. First is a couple of things I'm thankful for. One is you, Dr. Berry. Your leadership and kind of steady guidance on all this stuff is, I don't know where we would be without you and your deputy health officer, Dr. Locke, who's, I'm sure, floating on your shoulder somewhere. Also thankful for my colleagues and friends at the Maritime Center for stepping up and making the Wooden Boat Festival a vaccine required event. I feel like that's leadership. And I think that I think I saw a headline today in the newspaper that maybe the film festival is going that way too, but I'm not sure haven't read that article yet, just saw the headline. Couple of questions came up in our county COVID coordination meeting on Friday with the county. It's a meeting of all the department heads of the county. And do you have any sense of when we might want to go towards requiring proof of vaccination for entry to county buildings? That was one question. And the second question was when we might think of requiring vaccinations for county employees by certain departments, maybe, or certain segments, public facing employees. I don't know what the answer to this is, but it was brought up in that meeting. And I've heard a few other counties moving in that direction. So just wondering what your thinking is regarding that, and then if we need to have a conversation about those items.
Sure. Well, thank you for the kind words. And I would say that I also really support the Wooden Boat Festival moving to vaccine only. They were already planning a lot of safety protocols, which will still be in place. But I think we can really feel quite confident that that will not be a super spreader event now that this has all happened, and that it's not going to bring a large number of unvaccinated people into the community. Because I think that was one of the worries, is that then folks will then go into our stores and expose workers there. And so I think we can feel a lot more confident that this is going to be a really safe festival. So that I think is fantastic. As far as vaccine requirements for county workers, I do support it. I think we do need to lead by example when it comes to vaccination. And I know that it makes our workplaces safer. So when we've seen, we have had outbreaks in Clallam County because we have more cases. And so it happens. And it is really problematic for county government to lose access to employees. And certainly we have some folks who work for us who work in very high-risk spaces like jails. That's a place that I think it is very reasonable to mandate vaccines. Certainly, as we look at policies, we also have to look at the risks and benefits. And I think the biggest worry that I hear is about loss of workforce, especially when you have the kind of employment situation we have right now and challenges with replacing that workforce. But I do support it. I think it's a good idea. I think it would make a big difference. And we've certainly seen some other counties move forward with it. I particularly am quite passionate about making sure that our jail staff are vaccinated, because I do think it is an ethical obligation to make sure that those who are in jail are not exposed as a part of their sentence as well.
And are you moving in that direction in Clallam County or, you know?
Yeah, we are actually. We have a surprising amount of support from law enforcement on mandating vaccine. And so it's certainly a conversation that we're having at the county level for how best to do that, whether to have it be primarily a focused mandate or an all county city employee mandate as well.
And then any thoughts on proof of vaccination in county facilities?
I would say that with just personal perspective, I think we have to start with ourselves. So we can't require other people to be vaccinated. We're not requiring our own staff to be vaccinated. And then I think it comes down to more of a question about critical access and making sure that there are other ways to access these needed services. So make sure that we are meeting people's needs if they, you know, if they can't or aren't vaccinated. But yeah, I think making as many indoor spaces vaccine only, that, you know, while still offering critical services to the population, I think that's always the balance, is good. I would certainly support as many, you know, as many, Jefferson County establishments that are willing to go vaccine only. You know, certainly if we could see more bars and restaurants go vaccine only, I think that would make a big difference. And I think more people would feel safe going into them, in truth.
I think that's true. I saw, I think it was the Fountain Cafe or somebody posted on Facebook the other day, and I saw this flurry of, you know, support for him. And I think it's a good business strategy.
Yeah,
I think cards on your sleeve, you know.
Yeah, I think we forget how many people are not going out right now because they're scared. And if they know that space is safe, would be more likely to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions? All right. And I think it's important to state that the questions Heidi just brought up are very much just in the question phase. It's not, we're not, you know, there's a lot of consideration given to those. So I didn't take any of that lightly.
Yeah.
They're big. All right. You had a number of KPDZ questions, some of which you've answered, but I'm going to dive into those.
So one was about third doses, depending on the type of vaccine you have right now, and whether or not we're recommending mixing vaccines. So right now, third doses are recommended for a unique population. So just people with immunosuppressing conditions, cancer, genetic immunodeficiencies, or on immunosuppressing medications. And it's only right now recommended for the mRNA vaccines, so Pfizer or Moderna. We currently don't have recommendations for a third dose for J&J. And we don't right now recommend mixing them. We don't recommend adding a J&J onto an mRNA or anything like that. There's not really enough data right now to support that kind of a recommendation. I think it is also important to acknowledge that right now the recommendation is only for immunosuppressed folks. We still have really good data that this vaccine is still doing you a ton of good. So, you know, these, the mRNA vaccines were 95% effective against mild infection. And they are now probably about 85 to 88% effective against mild infection, which is still a really good vaccine. They're still making a huge difference, even with the Delta variant. So we're not encouraging everyone to rush out and get a third dose. And we're still waiting on the data and the ACIP recommendation on whether or not we're going to move forward with boosters. We're putting all our planning in place so that we're ready if they make that recommendation, but that recommendation has not been made yet. Otherwise, we talked, I think, a lot about the data. So hopefully that was helpful to the KPTZ listener who sent in that question, and happy to tweak the way we present the data as we go. We're always looking for how to make this as understandable as possible. And there's a lot of different ways to look at the numbers to get to that goal. We also talked a bit about outdoors. So yes, outdoor spaces, still very safe. Outdoor school, very safe. So if you're doing anything like that, you can feel quite comfortable with it. Otherwise, there was some talk about masks, what kind of masks we should be wearing. So your gold standard is your N95, slightly less effective, but still quite effective is a KN95. Go down from there, you get to a surgical mask. That's what I wear in most settings. Certainly in a clinical setting where I'm at high risk of getting exposed to COVID-19, you know, I used to work the COVID-19 clinic at Jamestown. So in that space, I wear an N95. But for most most people in most settings, a surgical mask will get you everything you need. They're pretty comfortable. They're very good at filtering the air as long as they fit your face well. So some folks you'll find that if you tie the ends, it'll hold against your face better. So you just want to see what holds tight against your face. Cloth masks can still be very good, but it depends a lot on the quality of your mask. So you need at least two layers. You need a tight weave so that you can't see light through it, and you need it to fit your face well. If you have cloth masks at home and you're looking for kind of how to bump them up a notch, you can actually insert a filter. A lot of folks have a filter pocket. You can insert, you can buy filters online, or actually cut a surgical mask and put it into your cloth mask. Actually a coffee filter helps too. But the cloth masks are still really good as long as they are, you know, tight enough weave and they fit your face. Certainly double masking can also help as well. But for most people, as we discussed, if you're fully vaccinated, you're wearing a good quality mask in an indoor space, you're going to do just fine. It's really unmasked where we're seeing most of our problems. And the only other thing on masks I would acknowledge is, as someone who has worn an N95 for 12 hours at a time, it is not comfortable. Most people don't want to do it. And so a mask only works as long as it stays on your face. So for most people, a surgical mask is better because you'll keep it on. Most people will take an N95 off. Otherwise, there were some questions about antibody testing. And so I think it's important to acknowledge, so antibody testing is available in clinical settings. There's not a lot of indications for it, though. We don't recommend antibody testing in order to decide whether or not your vaccine worked or to decide whether or not you're immune. Antibody testing is still a very new science when it comes to COVID-19, and we don't know what titer makes you protected. So in most cases, antibody testing is not needed. And generally, if you haven't gotten vaccinated, we recommend you get vaccinated. And if you are vaccinated and you're not in one of the groups that's recommended to get another dose yet, we just recommend you do all these other safety precautions that we talked about. There's not a lot of indication for them yet. And I think it is a good time to remember that having had prior COVID-19, that immunity fades. So if you had COVID-19 a year ago, you are not immune to the Delta variant if you have not gotten vaccinated. So it's really important to go ahead and get vaccinated. We think your immunity wanes within about 90 days. So it's a really good time to get that vaccine. Some questions about whether or not face shields are effective in lieu of masks. They are not. Face shields are eye protection. So you'll see when we work in a COVID-19 ward, you'll see we have face shields on over our masks. So they're a good added benefit to your mask, but they're not a replacement. There are some folks who really do need an exemption to masks. And so in some cases, you'll see them wear a shield with actually a drape under it that kind of catches this air below you. That can be a good option for folks who truly need an exemption. Remember, the exemptions are very, very rare. The vast majority of us can tolerate a mask. And if you find that you're having trouble, try different kinds of masks. Most people can tolerate a surgical mask better than most other masks. So if you don't like the cloth ones, try a surgical mask. The only other question I got on this topic was kind of the conversation around herd immunity. Oh, actually, there's two more. Sorry, there's a lot of questions. It's a conversation about herd immunity and what level we would need to get and if we're already there. So I think one of the things we talked about on one of our recent calls is that likely we need 80 or maybe even 90% for herd immunity from Delta. We don't have a firm number of what we would need to get to herd immunity from the Delta variant because it is so incredibly transmissible. One question the listener asked was, if we have had enough, community infections that we might have gotten there. And I think it's important to know that Jefferson County did a fantastic job at suppressing transmission. So you have very little community infection that you've had. It's well under 10% of your population has ever had COVID. Probably less than 5% of your population has ever had COVID. So if you aren't vaccinated, you are not immune. If many folks kind of think back and think, oh, I had a really bad cold or maybe the flu back then, maybe it was COVID. It probably wasn't. And you're probably not immune anymore. So because you guys have done so well at preventing transmission, it also means that if you aren't vaccinated, you likely have not been exposed and you're not immune. So we need very high rates of vaccination to reach that herd immunity level. But I also remind folks that herd immunity is less of a switch and more of a dial. So it does make a difference how many people are vaccinated even now. So for kind of a comparison, Collin County is about 12% less vaccinated than Jefferson County. Doesn't seem like much, but it's making a massive difference. That small difference in percent of vaccine. So right now about 700 people in Jefferson County are on quarantine. That number in Collin County is 7,000. And certainly the population in Collin County is bigger, but it's about twice Jefferson County's, not 10 times. And that whole difference is just vaccine. So a little percentage increase in vaccination makes a huge difference in transmission and a huge difference in your hospitals. Currently, you know, 5 of the ICU beds in Clallam County are occupied with folks with COVID. That's 25% of our ICU capacity. And that's even with the amount of vaccination we did. So that change makes a difference. Not just to the vaccinated, but to the community as a whole. Last but not least was a question about vaccine breakthroughs. So we touched a little bit on this, but I think it is important to kind of parse the data. So in fully, you know, largely heavily vaccinated spaces like Jefferson, you will see more breakthrough cases just because they're a larger percentage of the population. So you have more vaccinated people in Jefferson County than you have unvaccinated people. So the math will work out that you will start to see more breakthrough infection. The current breakthrough rate in Jefferson County is 16%. So 16% of the cases that we have had since February were among the vaccinated. But I also think it's important to parse those numbers by population. So if you are looking at the whole vaccinated population in Jefferson County, 0.3% of them have gotten COVID. And I think that helps when you're really looking at your risk. If you're a vaccinated person right now, 0.3% of vaccinated people have gotten COVID with this really massive surge. So it still works really, really well. When you look at hospitalization, so we have, I think we've discussed about this a little bit on this call before. So we have had a person who unfortunately got very sick and was vaccinated, got hospitalized and unfortunately died. That was a person who was profoundly immunosuppressed and couldn't respond to their vaccine. That will happen, unfortunately. There are people who can't respond to their vaccines, and that's part of why the rest of us get vaccinated, is to protect those people. Looking at the data in Washington State as a whole, less than 1% of all of those people hospitalized for COVID were vaccinated. So it makes a huge difference in how severe your infection is and your likelihood of being hospitalized. Any other questions on any of that stuff?
Can I follow up just on one of those last, I appreciate that parsing of the data that you just did there. And I'm wondering if you have numbers since vaccines were accessible, the percentage that are breakthrough. So, you know, end of April or sometime like that.
So that less than 1% number I gave you was since February, which is that's what we roughly use is when we started seeing people fully vaccinated. I can try to get you the numbers from April, but it'll be a little tricky.
I'm not trying to make work. I'm just wondering if the number is available. And the other question would be, so if I'm vaccinated, I have, and 0.3% of people that are vaccinated have had COVID, what percentage of people that aren't vaccinated have had COVID?
Approximately 5% in Jefferson. And so the reasoning for that, so it's more than 10 times likely that you'll get COVID if you're unvaccinated, but that number is still pretty small. The biggest reason why that number is so small is because of all the vaccinated people. So the sheer number of people getting vaccinated reduces the risk, not just for them, but for everyone else. So if you are unvaccinated, you're kind of riding on the coattails of all those people who got vaccinated, and it is protecting you. So in Clallam County, for example, for comparison, that number is probably about closer to 13%, 13 to 15% of Clallam County's unvaccinated have gotten COVID. So it's spreading much more quickly there. But it does make a difference for those who can't get vaccinated. So the fact that so many people got vaccinated has also protected Jefferson County's children quite a bit more.
Right. Was there a question too about 2-ply cotton masks still being sufficient?
And I think we touched base on that, but okay. Yes, two ply is good depending on the weave of the fabric. And so I always recommend at least two ply, hold it up to light. If you can see light through it, it's not thick enough. And mainly it just needs to fit your face real well.
All right. Shall we move over to Department of Emergency Management? Hi, Willie, what's going on in your world?
Hello, hello. So on the vaccine front, we unfortunately had to cancel our clinic down in Quilcene today due to lack of interest. But we are working with the two individuals who did sign up to help make arrangements for them to get their vaccine elsewhere besides that clinic. So disappointing news, but with the FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine announced earlier today, really hoping that that'll turn into an uptick of interest. I've seen a number of surveys and a number of polls where one of, if not the most oft-cited reason for people not getting the vaccine quite yet has been a lack of FDA approval. They feel it's rushed, they feel it was pushed through a little bit too quick, they're not quite sure. Well, now we have that full FDA approval and we have millions and millions and millions of people who've received that vaccine, with no long-term frightening side effects or anything like that other than protection from COVID. So between that approval, this abundant body of evidence, this big data set, I'm really hoping that FDA approval will be the last straw for a couple of people and finally convince them to go out and get that Pfizer vaccination. So we'll keep an eye, see if there's an uptick in demand, maybe schedule a large clinic to support that, but again, available at our pharmacies. So we're really hoping that folks will go and seek that out. If you're hearing this and this FDA approval is the straw that broke the camel's back and you don't know how to navigate the process towards getting an appointment, please call us here at the EOCC. EOC, it's 344-9791. We can help you find a place to get vaccinated. We can help you schedule your appointment, all that kind of fun stuff. So don't hesitate to reach out there. Over the next couple of weeks, we have a few private clinics scheduled to support employers and their compliance with some of the new vaccine mandates. So we'll be holding a few of those private clinics. Again, to help a few local agencies get their last remaining unvaccinated employees vaccinated in preparation for that October 18th deadline put forward by the state. And then our next clinics will focus on the immunocompromised. It has been formally recommended that they receive a third dose. Right now, they can already seek out that third dose at our local pharmacies or through their primary care physician or their healthcare provider. So talk to your healthcare provider if you want to get that third dose sooner rather than later. Or again, call us at the EOCC, go to the local pharmacy, you can get that third dose there. But we will have a couple of mass clinics available since we estimated that about 3% of the total population is immunocompromised and is recommended they receive that third dose. Here in Jefferson County, given our demographics, we estimate that could be that 3%. It could be as high as 5%, which would be about 1,500 people. So we're looking and seeing how many folks are going to their healthcare provider, how many folks go to the pharmacies, and then we'll have as many as anywhere from 2 to 4 large mass clinics, specifically for immunocompromised third dose. And those would likely be the beginning of September. So stay tuned for some information on that. Last, certainly not least, we are preparing for booster doses for everyone who received their two dose series. And again, as Dr. Berry had said, that's not formally recommended yet. So that's not imminent, but we are likely going to happen. So we're moving forward with planning as if it's gonna happen any day now. Those booster doses would start September 20th, so just about a month from now, and they would go right on down the line 8 months after you received your second. So it would start out with healthcare workers, certain older Jefferson County residents, other high-risk populations, and then it would go through that prioritization process that we experienced earlier this year. So we would look to be busiest. We'd start September 20th. We'd be busiest through November, December, January, since most people seem to have gotten their shot March, April, May. That's when things really opened up and the greatest number of us were able to get that vaccine. So we're starting planning for what those clinics and what those numbers would look like. Jefferson Healthcare, the KPTZ question concerned, well, how is that process going to look? Those of you remember, Jefferson Healthcare operated their drive-through 5-6 days a week and did a majority of the vaccinations within the county. Given the stress and the strain that they're currently under, and really all healthcare is under right now, it's likely going to be that DEM and public health partner to deliver most of these large vaccination clinics. And it's likely we won't have that sort of consistent, steady state drive-through 6 days a week like they did. Right now, our model, we're going to look for 2 to 3 large clinics every week, and they will be in different places. They're going to be spread out. So we'll hit, just like with our other large clinics, we'll be in Port Townsend, we'll be in Chimicum Hadlock, we'll be in Quilcene and Brennan, and we'll be at all sorts of different facilities, likely a mix of maybe large drive-throughs as well as indoor clinics if the weather is bad. So we're really looking at being really nimble and flexible and offering a menu of options for Jefferson County residents looking to get their shot. So keep an eye on both the formal recommendation that we believe is forthcoming as well as a potential schedule. Again, it'll start September 20th, but it'll be for a select few folks. For the vast majority of us, keep an eye on November, December, January, and we'll be able to get our booster shot. So, and our planning team is doing some amazing work right now, prepping for that, contacting facilities, starting to get a calendar put together. But again, nothing formal, nothing official quite yet, but we certainly have our eye on it. Other than that, I will make just one last pitch. For our EOC call center, 344-9791. Tell your friends, tell your family. If you have any questions at all, please call us. Right now, it's not staffed full-time, but we'll be moving back to a full-time in-person staff here shortly. So if no one picks up, please do leave a voicemail. We'll get back to you in 24 hours. Any questions at all, whether it's in regards to testing, the vaccine, it really doesn't matter. Please give us a ring. We're here to help. We're happy to help. The hospital is overwhelmed. Public health is overwhelmed. We have a team of volunteers who are here to take some of the strain off of them. So please give us a ring if you have any questions whatsoever. That's what we're here for. So other than that, I will take questions.
Great. And we'll just have to point out, we just have a few minutes because we have Department of Natural Resources joining us at 10:30. So. Quick burning questions. I have one, which I'm not sure which one of you might want to answer this, but just as a reminder to the public, if anyone has any COVID-like symptoms, could you talk them through the options currently?
You want to take that or me, Willie?
Feel free.
So yes, if you have mild COVID-like symptoms, so if you're feeling sick, you feel sick at all, feel like you might have a cold, feel like you might have the flu, if whether you're vaccinated or not, we recommend you get tested right away. There are a couple different options for how to do that. You can go, you can call the Jefferson Nurse Helpline and you can go through the drive-through, or you can actually go to Jefferson Healthcare and pick up one of these self swabs, swab yourself and drop it off, and they will process it for you and give you a call back with your results. Important to remember, don't go to the ER if you don't need ER services, but if you are feeling short of breath, if your symptoms are severe, then please do seek medical attention right away. Contact your provider and get medical care. So we're trying to save the Express Clinic for people who actually need a medical evaluation and don't just have the sniffles and need a test, and really keep folks who have milder symptoms with using the drive-through or one of the self-swab options. We do still see some self-swabs on the shelves for the rapid antigen test, but the availability is variable depending on how much need there is in the community and when their next shipment comes in. So that's most of the places we recommend getting tested. None of those places offer travel testing. For travel testing, you do need to utilize one of the drive-through pharmacies. And so the nearest ones for Jefferson County residents is Rite Aid and Squim.
Thank you.
And we have all that on the website too.
Yes, that's a good point. There's an updated testing options link on the Jefferson Healthcare site. I think also worth pointing out that because of the sheer volume of cases right now that public health is not able to keep up with contact tracing. So cannot necessarily assume that you would be contacted, correct?
Yeah, good to review just a little bit. So yeah, we, with the sheer number of cases, we have changed the way we're contact tracing. So we are still calling all cases, but we are not calling all contacts. So what we're doing is we're calling each person who has COVID and giving them the instructions to pass on to their contacts. And so whereas previously you could say, if you didn't get a call from public health, you've not been exposed, that is no longer true. If you get a call from your friend who says, hey, I have COVID-19 and we hung out on Tuesday, then you should consider yourself exposed. And I know it's 10:30, but briefly review what you're supposed to do if you get that call. So if you have been exposed to COVID-19 and you are vaccinated, you can still go to work, you can still go to the store, but you do need to wear a mask and watch out for any symptoms. Get tested as soon as you develop any symptoms, if you do. And either way, whether you get symptoms or not, get tested at 3 to 5 days. And we do have tests available for you. If you're a contact of a case, you can call Jefferson County Public Health and we will take care of you. If you are unvaccinated and your friend calls and says you were exposed to COVID-19, you need to quarantine at home for 10 days from when you were last exposed. And you should still get tested if you develop symptoms, or at 3 to 5 days if you don't.
Great, thank you. And I think public health will be releasing a kind of a flow chart infographic soon, this week, do you think, Dr.?
Oh, yeah.
That will help people navigate if they've been exposed, vaccinated or not, symptoms or not, should be helpful. All right, any last minute thing? It is 10:30.
Okay. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you
so much. Have a good, I hope you get at least hour of your life back next Monday morning. And we'll see you on Tuesday. Is that the 3rd of September?
7th.
Don't listen to me. I'm 7th. Thank you, Heidi.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
Again, a recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. And again, thank you for listening. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you, Dr. Berry. Thank you, Willie Bentz, for today's report. And as they said in departing, there will not be a meeting next Monday. It will be Tuesday, so it won't be on the air, and I'm quite sure Tucker will be in at 9:30 with alternate tunings. I hope so. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, kptz.org on the World Wide Web. And I'll be right back.